It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are and whenever you're listening. I'm glad to be here with you today, and we've got a great show. We're going to be talking with Rio. And Rio is a leading proponent of the raw living foods lifestyle. Through her lectures, radio shows, and website, she provides information about health-related issues and raw and living foods. She is the author of Hooked on Raw, which was recently revised, and we're going to be talking a lot about that on the show today. It's a big book, over 350 pages, on the raw live food lifestyle. It has 32 chapters, and it features gourmet live food recipes, and it also deals with many pressing issues impacting our health, such as irradiation of food, genetic engineering of seeds and plants, and the extensive hybridization of seeds, and the value of organic foods, wild foods, fertile soil, wonderful rejuvenating effects of fasting, ideas on how to integrate into raw live food lifestyle, and much, much more. Rio's really knowledgeable and a really talented individual. Are you with us, Rio?
I'm here. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us, and I'm really excited to talk to you today. I had the opportunity a while ago, in the early 2000 or sometime around then, you had these fundraisers and events in your home, and I was going to say cooked up, but no, prepared a wide range of wonderful, wonderful foods.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And I just wanted to compliment you. I was on your site today, and I heard your singing. I had actually heard you once before, I think, at an event.
I remember.
At, you remember that event?
Yeah, you and Lee sang
Lincoln
also.
Lincoln Center.
Oh, right. No, I remember being at a raw food festival once, and you and Lee did some really adorable duets and songs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but yeah, I used to run a food festival at Lincoln Center 5 years in a row called Taste of Health.
That was the one. I heard you sing there.
Yeah, and I like to say that I organized this festival that had around 10,000 people come every year, but I did it because I wanted to say that I sang at Lincoln Center. Which really isn't true, obviously.
Well, I imagine you can sing anywhere. You have a wonderful voice.
Thank you. Well, one of the things that I liked to do at that event was sing songs about food. And I didn't write any of my own, but what I frequently did was rewrite some of the words to make everything vegan-friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's funny because you just sent me some songs, and unfortunately I just got them, so we're not going to be able to hear them on the show.
Too late.
But they are about food, so maybe you could tell us where we can find those songs.
Well, they're going to be in an upcoming album that I have. The album title is called I'm Just a City Girl Transplanted in the Country. And the songs that I sent you are, one is called Where's All the Protein, because that's the first question that comes up.
That's right.
As you know. And the other one's the other one that I sent you is called Have Some Papaya Today.
Hmm. I love papaya. In fact, I think I will.
Okay.
I'm going to have to pick up some as soon as this show is over. So you have a website. Just I want to get this out before we get going. Rawfoodinfo.com.
Right.
And it is loaded with information.
It is. It's jam-packed. As a matter of fact, I'm doing an update. I have a tech working on an update, and he's been working for months. He says, I never saw so many pages.
Right. Well, that's the complication when you update a website when there's so much info, because a lot of it ends up being lost in the raw sauce, and we don't want to do that.
Right. No, he's not going to lose any of it, but it is taking a while.
And you also do a radio show.
Yes, I do.
And that's online, too, so people can check that out. What's that
they
website?
They can check that out at nytalkradio.net.
Right. Well,
and I have a new show each week.
The thing is that we're doing all that we can to put out this really valuable information that will help our health, make us have long, quality, wonderful lives, and also do great things for the planet. And we're doing whatever we can, wherever we can, to combat the media, of mainstream media, of all kinds of misinformation.
Oh, for sure.
So
for
I support
sure.
you.
And I support you. I saw you on Dr. Oz, too.
Oh, yeah.
That was wonderful, that green drink you gave him.
Thank you. That was amazing. And I will confess, I like being on television.
I do, too.
And I would really like to have my own show. Let me put that out there on the universe. Because, you know, there really aren't any. Dr. Oz is doing a great thing, but we need to see more shows, or just shows that focus on plant foods.
Exactly. And we also need to see shows that go even beyond Dr. Oz, because, you know, Dr. Oz is holding the line at a certain point,
yeah,
beyond which I think he self-censors.
Yeah, well, you know, I said things.
We don't want to self-censor.
No, I said things on that show that they edited out.
Really? Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
But, you know, I wasn't on very long, but I tried.
No, you weren't.
I
no,
was
but...
carefully planning what it was I was going to try and say, depending on what he asked, and they didn't include all of it.
You came across beautifully, really.
Thank you.
Really. And that juice, whoa, was a bomb.
Well, you know, I do that every day. I said I did it every day on the show, and it is my religion, where I juice every day, and there's lots of reasons behind it. What I was into juicing, not on a regular basis, but I realized the importance of it a long time ago, especially because of the situation we're in with depleted soils and all of that. We can get into that in a minute. But you may or may not know, I did have ovarian cancer.
I was reading that this morning. I was sorry to hear that.
Which really struck me because, you know, I'd been leading this healthy vegan lifestyle, and I was completely raw for 2 years. And I want to believe, even though none of that saved me from getting the disease, I believe that I wouldn't be alive today if I didn't have the lifestyle that I eating the foods that I'd been eating.
You know, it's not only the food, Karen. It's so many, you know, there's 80,000 chemicals in our
mm-hmm.
environment today. 80,000 chemicals. Think about it.
I was
and
a chemical engineer
those,
for 20 years, so I know I was exposed
right,
to some
so,
of them.
So any one or a combination of those can cause things that we're not aware of.
Yeah, I know. So what can we do? We can do whatever we can. Eat raw or a lot of raw food and really supercharge our immune system.
Definitely.
So you have a pretty interesting story on how you got to where you are today. Maybe you could just, like, give us a little snippet.
Well, my first introduction to raw was when I was a teenager. It was the first job I ever had was in a juice bar in a health food store.
Hmm.
And in that juice bar, I was serving fresh, raw juices and smoothies. And people used to come in and tell me that they were getting, let's say, the potassium drink for a certain condition or watermelon juice for their kidneys or this for that. And I started making the connection for the first time in my life that, wow. I mean, previous to that, I had I'll tell you, if you have a time, I'll tell you a childhood experience I had with garlic.
Yeah.
But this was like the first time I had the connection. People were actually teaching me. This is healing me or keeping me healthy or whatever. And so I started making those connections. And then when I was working in the juice bar, I would stare across the other side of the store where there would be all these interesting products and books I had never seen before. And it was just so intriguing to me. And so when I got my paycheck at the end of the week, I would trot over to the other side. And I really never made any money that summer because I'd spend so much money in the store. But one of the books that I bought was by Ann Wigmore. And as you know, and maybe your listeners, or if they don't know, Ann Wigmore is sort of the mother of the raw food movement, the modern raw food movement. And so I was definitely introduced to it early. I'd like to say that I jumped on it then. I didn't. But what I did do at that time is I introduced juicing into my life. I got a juicer. And I also got rid of all the foodless foods, the white flour, the white sugar, you know, all of the stuff that's really, all the processed foods. Mm-hmm. And I just went for fruits, vegetables, nuts, and seeds. But they most, you know, some of them were cooked. At least 50% was cooked at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, a few years later, I had sort of a tragedy that happened to me. And as most people do, unfortunately, we assuage our feelings and our emotions with food, and I ate a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I gained a lot of weight. I'm only 5 foot tall, and so I'm petite, and I gained like 80 pounds, over 80 pounds. And so I had that weight on for 4 years, and it was bothering me a lot. I stopped singing because I had been singing previously. I stopped singing, and it was bothering me. And then my partner, who's a great guy, just amazing, I kept telling him, you know how you do when you know you got to do something, but you're not, you know, you just can't motivate yourself to start to do it because it's such a big project.
Yeah, it seems too huge.
To lose a ton of weight like that. So I kept telling him, you know, I need a motivation. I need to be motivated. I bugged the hell out of him. And one day he comes in and he says, guess what? I just booked us into a club that we used to work when I was singing, and it's 6 weeks away. So you've got the motivation now. Get yourself together. That was one of the most wonderful things anybody ever did for me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, sometimes that's all it takes when we have something really big that's important to get
that's,
us to give us
true.
A kick in the butt.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, you've... first, I wanted to say, when you said you were 5 foot, I'm 5 foot three. I consider myself pretty petite also. But when I think of you, it must be your aura or something, because I think of you as a big presence, not a large person.
Right, right.
I think of you just, you know, I don't see you as small.
Uh-huh.
I see you as someone who has a lot of information to bring. So it's just, I don't think of you as 5 foot.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how to put that. I think it's a, you know, when I see myself in a reflection in the mirror sometimes, I think, oh, who is that little person? Because I perceive myself as being big and powerful.
Hmm. Well, thank you. I think that's
so
good.
So I think that's the strength that I'm talking about.
Right.
Okay.
I think that's good. But I have been called a big mama before. But I think that sometimes I sing bluesy songs, and so they get the impression, you know, like a big mama.
This book that you have, it originally came out in 2000. What was the incentive to re-release it?
Well, it's actually been out all this time. It has never been out of print for 10 years.
Great.
I kept it going myself and had pretty good sales on it. And then through just appearing in different places and speaking in different places, we came into contact with a publisher, and they approached us on publishing the book. And we thought, okay, 10 years later, it's about time. Why not?
Right. Well, there's certainly been a lot more activity or a lot more interest in raw foods.
That's true.
Which is a good thing.
Yes.
And what's great about this book is about half of it really goes into some great discussions. And what you're really good at is putting it in layman terms, putting all these complicated issues into dialogue that people can understand.
And well, thank you. Thank you. You know, when I was working with an editor on this, and one of the things that he told me is, I never saw a book that started with, "Hi, my name is Rio." And he says, "Are you sure you want to do that?" And I said, "Yes."
Yeah.
I'm just talking to people.
I think that's
important.
People to
people, you know?
Yeah, I think that's important, especially, well, more and more in this, high-level media age where a lot of things are on video. When we go back to the printed word, we want to connect.
Right.
So
let me just say one other thing. The funny part about it is back when I was shopping the book, because I was trying to get a publisher to begin with. I didn't choose to self-publish in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I did get two publishers. And you know that whole beginning section that you think is so great?
Yeah.
Both of those publishers wanted me to eliminate them or cut them down to 20 pages.
Right.
And I couldn't do it.
Well, there are different kinds of books on diet, and some of them are by medical doctors, and a lot of people feel a need to have all of this clinical information from medical doctors, and there's a place for that. That's really good, and I've got a lot of them. But then there, sometimes you need something that holds your hand, and that's like a friend, and talks to you in a way that you'll understand, and that's what this book does.
Well, thank you.
So any of you out there that need a friend to help you along eating healthier foods and more raw foods in your diet, Hooked on Raw is a great book to pick up. And I say pick up, but you need two hands because it's a big, heavy book.
It is. Big book.
There's a lot of stuff in it. Okay, so there's a few little topics I just wanted to talk about in here that you discussed that I think are really important and are confusing to some people. And the first thing is enzymes.
Okay. So enzymes, that's the first thing that people, raw food people, usually go to. And enzymes are certainly very important. Because when you cook food, you're destroying the enzymes because enzymes are not heat tolerant. So depending on what kind of food it is, between 105 to 118 degrees Fahrenheit, you've destroyed or greatly reduced those enzymes. And why this is important, there was a researcher back in the 1930s, and there's been some researchers since as well. This one that I'm referring to, his name is Edward Howe. He was an enzyme researcher.
Mm-hmm.
And he would test animals on cooked food and raw food. And he found that the animals that he gave the cooked food to, over time, their pancreases would increase. And he surmised that that was happening because when an organ has to produce some kind of product, like enzymes, it has to sometimes increase its tissue to meet with the demand of how much enzymes it has to produce. Whereas when he fed the animals raw food, they had normal pancreases, not increased in size. So that was one of his theories, was that we are depleting our body of enzymes by eating cooked food. He believes that you have an enzyme bank account and it's finite.
Mm.
I don't want to believe that, because then I would believe in aging, and I don't believe in aging. And, you know, I have certain other beliefs that what he says doesn't go along
sure.
with. But this is what he said. So if that were to be true, then we really have to guard this like a bank account that we really need. And the best way to do that is to eat raw food, or to eat as much raw food as you can.
Well, what's interesting is we see a tremendous increase in diabetes. And we know that type 2 diabetes is caused by an overworked pancreas. And it just kind of gives up.
Yes.
So we're seeing it.
We're seeing it. And by the way, I'd like to tell your listeners that there's a doctor in Arizona that has done some wonderful work on that. He's been able to reverse type 2 diabetes, and in some cases type 1 as well, with the raw food diet.
Mm-hmm.
And do you want me to mention his name?
Sure.
Dr. Gabriel Cousins.
Oh, yeah.
He has the Tree of Life Center there in Patagonia, Arizona, I think.
Right. Well, what's always appealed to me about the raw food diet is that's how what humanity started on. It's
exactly.
Really what nature intended.
That's what's out there. I mean, every animal that I see on my farm is eating raw food, sometimes from my garden, by the way. Like some groundhog that just got all my cucumbers.
Yeah, well... That'll happen, and
right.
In some ways it can be an annoyance, but in other ways it's nice to mix.
But
the
thing
others.
Is, I planted stuff outside the garden for them.
Oh.
You see,
oh,
but
well.
I haven't been able to communicate in groundhog talk yet.
Oh, I'm sure you'll work that out. And maybe they really needed those cucumbers.
That's true, and I was away for 3 weeks, so...
Oh, there we go.
What happens with cucumber plants, I don't know if you know, when if you don't pick them as they're ripening, the plant just dries up because it thinks it's not needed anymore.
Oh, so the groundhogs were helping you.
So the groundhogs were helping me.
There we go.
Because when I got back, I only had 5 cucumbers, so they ate all the rest.
there's a lot of discussion about... how as the population increases, we're not going to be able to provide enough food for the planet. And I have some thoughts on this. I don't know if you do.
Oh, I have a lot of thoughts on this.
I'm sure you do.
I think people need to get back to growing their food.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the most powerful actions that we can take today to show the corporations that are actually trying to take over our food, like the Monsantos of the world, that we want our own food. We want nature's food. We don't want their genetically engineered Frankenstein food. We just don't want that, even though it's been forced down our throats because in the United States there's no labeling for GE. And, of course, our government and the industry both tell us that it's substantially equivalent to regular food, and don't get me started on this unless you want to.
Oh, of course I do.
Okay, well, when in our history of agriculture, 10-12,000 years back, the indigenous farmers of the world are what brought us the developed food that we have now. And the way they did it was in a very loving and compatible with the earth way. Let's say two pea plants or two whatever kind of plants. And one of them had a quality that they wanted and the other one had a quality they wanted. And both plants were in the same family. Same plant family. So what they would do is they'd bring those two plants together, introduce them, like a date, like a blind date. Okay, you're getting together, maybe something's gonna happen, maybe not. And that's how hybridization happened, whereas if those two plants did exchange their genes and they did mate, you'd get the best of both. The best of one and the best of the other in that plant. But with genetic engineering, even though they're trying to tell us that it's the same thing, it's just one step forward from that.
One
it's
little
the same
step.
Thing. But it's not, because you're not introducing two plants together and letting them decide.
No, it's very violent.
It's violent. You're tearing into that genome. You're putting in what you want to put in, and the plant has nothing to say about it. The plant has nothing to say about it. And that is a disaster, not only for the environment, but also for our health, because most of the independent research that's coming out, and there was just a study done, commissioned by the Austrian government, on it, they find that eating this genetically altered food makes you, like three generations down, makes you sterile.
Mm.
And this is compatible with other independent studies that are happening all over the world in Russia and other places.
It's interesting. I think genetically modified food and a lot of other things that we're doing to alter food are affecting our vitality and our fertility.
Oh, definitely.
And we're seeing more and more infertility. And you're making me think about it. Now, I know that part of the infertility problem is because people are just poorly nourished and they're eating a lot of garbage and the body's just not functioning correctly. But another part of it definitely can be deeper in the DNA.
Well, the Grocery Manufacturers of the United States, that organization who oversees the grocery stores all over the country, they say that 60 to 70% of the food in the supermarket is genetically engineered. Now, that's the processed food, of course, because most processed food has either corn derivatives or soy derivatives or canola or something that's genetically engineered. Right now, I'd like to tell your audience that right now there's only a few products that are genetically engineered, like corn, soy, cotton, canola, papaya that comes out of Hawaii. And they were trying to get the sugar beets, but I think that was stopped by a court temporarily.
Yes, it's temporary.
And they were also trying to get alfalfa. Now, if they got alfalfa, that was also stopped by a court temporarily. But if alfalfa goes out, you will not have any organic meat or dairy, period. Because, you know, plants share their genetic material through pollen and through insect and other vectors.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't keep that. I like to say, you know, that's nature's way of being bountiful and generous. You know, she wants to share with everybody, let it go out and be bountiful. But in this instance, when there's private corporation trying to take over the food supply, then it becomes insidious.
Yeah.
Because there's no way to protect organic. There's no way to protect even conventional.
It really is frightening to think about what slips into foods that we can't see. So I just want to repeat that a lot of genetically modified foods are in processed foods. Jacqueline said, if man made it, don't eat it. So you need to really be wary of the things that come in a box.
Exactly.
And then for those that eat animal foods, those animals have been fed corn and soy that have been genetically modified, and so they have those organisms in their body. And when you eat their flesh or their fat or their bodily secretions like milk, you can also get that in your body.
Yes, you can.
In concentrated
Yes,
varieties.
You can. And also in the United States, it's been outlawed in other countries, but in the United States, we're still using genetically engineered synthetic hormone that's injected into the cows to make them produce more milk.
Mm-hmm.
They become, you know, super cows, but there's a price to be paid. And all the milk in the United States is pooled, so there, unless it's organic milk, you've got that synthetic hormone, genetically engineered hormone, in the milk and in the cheese and any other products from milk, like yogurt or kefir or whatever.
It's frightening, and there's really only one way to effectively deal with it, and that is the power of your spending dollars. Are you going to support all of these frankenfoods and these unhealthy foods, or are you going to buy food that's going to nourish your body, make you healthy, and not support these people that are poisoning our food supply?
Exactly. And a lot of people will say, the first thing they'll say is, well, organic is so much more expensive. But when you figure it out, it really isn't more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
We have to remember that in our country, a lot of the corn and soy and wheat and other, well, wheat isn't genetically engineered at the moment, but a lot of the big crops are subsidized. And we're paying for that. We're paying for those subsidies. And the small farmer, he can't get his hands on any of that money. But the small farmer is trying to do the right thing, you know. It's very difficult, I would say, it's very difficult on factory farms, industrial-type farms, where there's thousands and thousands of acres, and usually those acres are devoted to one crop. It's very hard to get the kind of food we want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
From a farm like that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, let me just, if I could, can I describe my farm, or at least my vision of my farm?
How about this? We need to take a little break.
Oh, sure.
And you can stick with us, because I really want to hear about your farm.
All
and
right.
Also talk about the great recipes in your book. Okay? We'll be right back.
PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
This is an emergency. No, it isn't. It's an urgency. I'm Danny Schechter, your news dissector on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com with a new show called News Dissector. It's built on the blog that I do every day from MediaChannel.org, dissecting news, analyzing what's happening in the world, offering very cool music and great guests. Thursdays, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Be there for B-Square.
This is Peter Roth, the host of Energy Stew, which airs on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. My show interviews fascinating authors, inventors, and researchers of new understandings, techniques, and discoveries that can enhance and transform our lives. What is our potential and how can we fulfill it to the max? To find out, tune into Energy Stew and Peter Roth at 8 p.m. Thursdays on Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, you're listening to Bhavani, and I'd like to welcome you every Wednesday on the Progressive Radio Network to join me for my show called I Eat Green, where every Wednesday we will talk about eating healthy and eating sustainably for our planet. So join me every Wednesday from 5 to 6.
You are listening to Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And we talk about all kinds of food-related issues on this show, how food affects health, environment, and certainly the treatment of animals. And I'm here with Rio. Hi, Rio.
Hi.
And you were just about to tell us about your farm.
You know, there's an old Japanese saying that says, the proverb, it says, the best fertilizer in the world is the footprint of the farmer.
Mm.
And I really believe that's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, industrial farms, factory-style farming, there is no farmer walking that land. There's no heart investment. There's no spiritual investment in the land.
You know, that's really important, and I don't want to stop you here, but you talk about the importance of love in your book, putting love into recipes and love into food, and I really believe that it affects everything, just like you say.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And it affects in the growing of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have a farmer, like I have a very small farm, it's not open for business yet. Hopefully, knock on wood, next year.
Mm.
But anyway, I'm in the process of building it up and developing it. And so you have a small farmer. I can walk my farm. I can see what this plant needs or that tree needs or how I can organize things and how I can make them better because it's a people size.
Mm.
It's not 100,000 acres.
Right.
24 acres. It's people size. I can walk it. I can be with it. And I really believe small farms are the salvation for our country. And to another subject that you had mentioned before in the last segment is that you said, well, what can people do? I think people can start growing some of their own food at least. In cities and in suburban communities, we have blocks with houses on them. Well, what about every house growing a different fruit tree and everybody in the block sharing, or a different nut tree?
Right.
This can happen. It's very doable, and this is something that was happening actually before the advent of supermarkets.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's, well, we're going to see it out of necessity, I think, sometime in the future, but it would be great if we could be smart and move towards this direction before we experience some pain and suffering.
Yes.
But, yeah, because giant agribusiness is really devastating in so many ways. The quality of the food is really poor.
It is.
And all the herbicides and pesticides are destroying the topsoil. Topsoil needs to be alive, alive with bacteria and life, microorganisms, and all of the things that agribusiness uses kills all of that.
Exactly. They, even in agribusiness, they don't even have their own bees. On my farm, I have thousands of bees.
Mm-hmm.
They have to import their bees in at the proper time to do their job. I mean, isn't that crazy?
It is. A farm
that doesn't have its own bees because they put so many chemicals and so many pesticides in there. Who wants to eat that food?
Well, exactly. Who wants to? And I think that's part of the issue, because if there wasn't demand, they wouldn't be able to supply it. And so it's kind of a chicken and egg catch-22 thing, where we really need to stress to people that they should demand quality food and not buy food that isn't.
Right.
But it's tricky. I've been talking a lot about cheap food, and most people, unfortunately, don't get the connection or don't have the ability. They think very short term and just go and buy food to satisfy their quote hunger at the moment and go for whatever is the least expensive. But there are so many long term expenses or long term costs that people don't see right in front of them.
They're called externalities. And somebody, I forget what group had done it, but they had done a cost analysis of what just a small package of tomato sauce would cost, and including the externalities, which are like the shipping from one coast to the other, and,
mm-hmm.
and different other things involved in producing that. And it was like $25 or something for a small jar. So we're subsidizing food in this country. We don't know the real cost.
That's right.
The cheapest food that we can get is local food.
That's right.
Local food grown from small farmers. And I think that we're seeing what you said, you want to see people go for that. I think we're seeing it happening now, because there's such a proliferation of farmers markets all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't you noticed that?
Mm-hmm.
Much more than, let's say, 10 years ago. And people are going back to the farm in certain ways. There's even urban. I was just reading this morning, there's a farm on a rooftop in Brooklyn or something. It's called an urban farm.
Yeah.
On a rooftop.
Yeah, we're going to be seeing a lot more of that. I grow whatever I can on my tiny little terrace in my apartment in Forest Hills.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But, you know, I wish I could grow a lot more.
Right.
Okay. So, bottom line is, folks, I recommend, and I think Rio is with me, where we'd like to see people eating more whole, fresh fruits, vegetables, nuts and seeds, and Rio's got a lot of great ways to serve them up.
And just incorporate more raw, whatever percentage raw you're doing now, just up it a little. You can do it easily. If you're interested in trying some of this, just easy does it. Just,
mm-hmm.
you know, each day a little more, each week a little more, like that. You don't have to jump right into it 100% raw. And, you know, that's actually a personal choice anyway.
I think the summertime and the warm weather is really an ideal time to jump into this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's when the weather's hot, like right now in New York.
Right.
And
People don't want to eat as much anyway, right?
You don't want to eat as much, but the idea of eating cool foods, things mm-hmm. that you don't have to cook,
right.
is a lot more appealing.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I'm just thumbing through your book, and one great thing to do is to have very interesting dressings to put mm-hmm. on salads and other and raw vegetables. And you've got some great ones in here, like this is something I eat all the time, which is like a tahini lime dressing. And you actually put a little mustard in yours, which I mm-hmm. can imagine dices it up a little bit.
I also have a recipe for raw mustard, which is coming up in my next book.
Mm-hmm.
I figured out a way to do raw mustard. And it's just as good as the Dijon mustard that you buy in any store.
Oh, it's probably better.
I think it's better.
Absolutely.
My partner, he was skeptical. You know, Lee's always a skeptic. Because actually, I have to say that he's the one. The reason I have this book in the first place is because of him, because he didn't want to go raw. So I thought, how can I entice him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in my kitchen. I knew what kind of flavors he liked, and I started concocting things, and I would spring them on him, you know, and some of them he would like, some of them he didn't. But over time, we got a group of recipes that he really did like. And after a few years, he said, you know, you have all these recipes. Maybe other people would like to share that. And that's how the book started, just simply because of that, of him saying that.
Well, I think what I like about all the different dressings is they're easy. And probably once you get the hang of the format, you can make your own variations. But it's a great way to take plain, simple food, which is what we really should be eating, and just give it enough little variation and kick to give some diversity in your meals. Here's one with papaya.
Papaya French dressing. Oh, that one's great.
Papaya, orange juice, olive oil, garlic cloves, agar flakes, thyme, and some sea salt. And I think the thing is to have some fat and something acidic, like a citrus, is really the theme. But you can get those from whole raw foods.
Sure.
And
some of these dressings will last more than one day. A lot of people say, oh, well, I got to make the salad, and then I got to make the dressing. And, you know, so some of these dressings, because they have that little acid in them, whether it's vinegar or lemon juice, will last more than one day.
Sure, they usually last a few days. But, you know, you bring up a really interesting point. I know everybody's got really busy lives, and they like to grab things that are quick and convenient and don't want to have to get involved in the kitchen. But we really need to be eating fresh food. And there's a way to get into the knack of preparing things quickly in the kitchen. I know a lot of people buy fresh food thinking, okay, I'm really going to try this week, and then the food rots in the refrigerator and they don't eat it. We need to buy the food fresh, eat it, and then move on. The food needs to be eaten. And
you know, I've never been in Europe, Italy, France, but I have friends who've been there.
I lived in France. Yeah.
Oh, did you? Mm-hmm. So you could verify this for me. People shop every day, I've heard.
Yeah, or every two or three days, yeah.
Right. They bring it home, they shop, they bring it home, they eat it.
Right.
It really should be a celebration. I mean, really, this is life, isn't it?
Yeah.
It should be a celebration, and we should all be in the kitchen. I remember when I was a kid, okay, we weren't eating raw food, but we were celebrating food. Everybody would be in the kitchen when my mom would be preparing food, and somebody would be shelling the peas, and somebody else would be doing something else, and we'd all share that.
Well, this is part of where we need to radically rethink the way we do things, because the really large supermarkets, and they're appearing more and more in Europe as well, makes it more difficult to shop every few days because things are in larger quantities and it's not right in the neighborhood. You have to take your car and park and bring all these heavy bags back. Whereas when you have a little neighborhood market or a little neighborhood farmer's market or farm, you pick up things in small amounts as they've been harvested. And we need to find a way to make this more convenient for people.
Right. Well, I would suggest, I'm giving everybody else's website except my own, but I would suggest there's somebody called Jules Dervais. Do you know him?
No.
He has that little Pasadena homestead, and it's just a house on a city lot. That's all he has, and they grow 80% of their own food on that lot.
Whoa.
In the summer, and 65% in the winter.
Great.
So can you imagine on a city lot, just a regular house, he's got his front lawn taken, his back lawn taken, his side, you know, everything. Every square inch is in use, and it's wonderful. People should go to his website. If you just put his name in, I'm sure it'll come up, Jules Dervais, D-E-R-V-A-E-S. And just go there and see what the abundance could be. It's just amazing.
I'm going to do that.
And again, if people share, I mean, let's say you don't have the heart of a gardener, but you could grow one thing. Let's say you grow cucumbers.
you know, and your neighbor grows tomatoes, and the next neighbor grows turnips, and the next one grows beets, and everybody shares.
Mm-hmm.
Why not?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's how currency actually started, when people bartered by sharing or exchanging the products that they had.
Right.
We definitely need to get back to something like that, because the value of things is really out of hand. Why some people can get $500 an hour or more for a service when some people only get $7 an hour. There's some things that are really out of whack.
Yes, definitely. Or how some corporate executives get millions of dollars, but they can't give a cost of living increase to their employees.
Yeah.
You know, and they have these obscene parachutes that they get away with.
Okay, so I want to get back to talking about food, because that's my favorite subject, delicious food.
Can I mention one thing, Karen?
Yeah, please.
Because this is really Gervais to this conversation. There's a bill before the Senate now. It's called Senate Bill 510, and it's being debated in the Senate. And it's going to impact our food really in a very big way. It's called the Food Safety Modernization Act.
Mm-hmm.
Senate Bill 510.
Yeah.
And that does not exclude small farmers, organic farmers, biodynamic farmers. And what it will do, it will paint with the same brush stroke applies to farms of tens of thousands of acres to a small farm like mine. Well, this is impossible. You can't apply this. First of all, the food reach of a farm like mine will only reach a few people. A farm of tens of thousands of acres reaches hundreds of thousands of people, and that's where food safety comes in. My small farm, I'm eating the food first. If I don't die from it, you're not going to die from it, you know? So you can't paint the same brushstroke. And why I say that is because there's many, many, I don't want to take up the whole conversation with that, but
it's very important.
But the fact is that just one element of that bill, which says that you have to meet these, there's going to be a new agency set up under Health and Human Services, and it's going to be the Food Safety Agency or whatever they're going to call it in some future time. But they're trying to pass the bill now for something that isn't even created. We don't know who's going to be the head of it, except we have a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Because Obama...
Somebody from Monsanto, right?
In Obama's transition team, he's got Michael Taylor, and he's the one that brought us GMO and the RBGH milk.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the head of that transition team, so there he is. This is the dichotomy. I don't understand this. The wife, Michelle, is doing an organic garden on the lawn on the one hand, and he's got this industry guy in his ag transition team who's supposedly in line to head up that agency. Now, one of the tenets of that agency is that if you don't comply with these food safety regulations, it doesn't matter if you're a small farm like mine or a big farm, that the fines start. And I checked this out because I didn't believe this. I checked this out, $100,000 per infraction per day. Now, what small farm is going to survive that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's crazy. And especially since we really know what the major contributors are to foodborne illnesses.
Yes, we do.
And it's factory farming of animals who are crammed into very small spaces, and they live in their own excrement and filth, where bacteria...
It's obscene conditions that create
this. It is. And so if we really care about food safety, that bill would look very different.
Right.
And if I was...
So I just want to mention to your listeners to call their senators and tell them why they don't want that bill, because it will destroy small farms, organic farms, and farmers' markets. Senate Bill 510, it even extends, apparently, the tentacles of it extend even into home orchards.
Right. Well, something not exactly the same but similar to that is, in order to have to be certified as organic is often very cost prohibited to small farmers.
Yes.
All the paperwork and red tape that they have to go through. And so sometimes you wonder when farmers aren't organic, but they say that they are, but they don't have the certification. That's what we're dealing with.
A lot of small farmers are organic. I'm not going to be certified organic. I'm going to get a certification through a private, there's a private organization out here called Certified Naturally Grown. Mm-hmm. And when you look at what they're about, it says you meet all the organic standards and above if you want.
Right.
You know. So it will be organic. I just can't use the word. But what I find really upsetting is that the small farmers, the ones that were taking care of the land, they came up with the word organic, and now they've lost the use of it.
Yeah, so they have to take it back or come up with a new term.
Well, I didn't come up with this word, but I heard a word that's good. It's called truganic.
Okay, that's good. Right. There's also veganic, which is
veganic.
A whole nother subject.
That's a whole nother subject. I'm not entirely in agreement with veganic. Because it would take out the animal element.
Right.
And I think in nature, animals
are
a part of it.
Supposed to be there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any favorite recipes in this book?
Oh, favorite recipes. Let me see. I love my Caesar salad.
Mm.
Oh, I love my Caesar salad because before I was into this, I loved Caesar salads. So when I was trying to figure out what can I do to, you know, get a Caesar salad going, I really, really love my Caesar salad. And then there's a really good kind of like a jello that's made with blueberries, bananas, and lemon. And you just blend it all together, put it in the refrigerator, and it gels up because blueberries have pectin in them.
Only fresh.
Fresh.
Yeah.
Of course, fresh.
It doesn't work with frozen.
Only fresh.
And that's
really... Did you try it with frozen once?
I have once tried it with frozen.
Oh, and it didn't work.
It didn't work.
Oh, something about the freezing.
Yeah, I don't know because...
disabled the pectin or something.
And, you know, I fall in with the rest of everyone that likes to have things that are reasonably priced and convenient, and blueberries are not available fresh and organic all the time and for reasonable prices. And so sometimes I go to Trader Joe's and I get organic frozen blueberries, and they're great in smoothies, but they don't do that magic gelling that I like.
Okay. But also, you know, people can have a few blueberry bushes in their backyard.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, and they come back every year and they take care of themselves, basically.
Yeah, there's a lot of magic in food that way.
And the other thing that I like, and I don't know if I developed it, I haven't seen anybody else doing it. I've seen other people call some things that they're doing yogurt, but I developed a yogurt made out of nuts and seeds. And let's say you're using almonds. So you blend up the almonds with some water, filtered water or clean water, and then you blend it all in the blender, and then you put it through a muslin bag and squeeze out all the liquid, and then you let that liquid ferment overnight.
Mm.
And you've got yogurt.
Wow.
And if people can see it on YouTube, just put in Rio's yogurt.
That sounds good and pretty simple.
Very simple.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple.
Well, I can't say enough about raw nuts and seeds. And there's more and more scientific information saying that we need those healthy fats from raw nuts and seeds. And soaking them and blending them, they make so many wonderful different things, from raw sour cream, seasoned appropriately. You can have like a mayonnaise or like a whipped cream for desserts. It's a thickener to enrich soups.
Well, I was fiddling around in my kitchen because actually we were on vacation for a few weeks and we went to Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was making all the food. We stayed in a little cabin that had its kitchen.
Yeah.
And so I came up with a cheese, which is really, really simple. You just soak some Brazil nuts, let's say 1 cup of Brazil nuts overnight. You soak them overnight, then you drain them, rinse them and drain them, put them in the blender with a half a cup of water, 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, and a half a teaspoon of Celtic salt. Blend it up, and then take a muslin bag, or you could take a very thin dish towel, but not the one with the big holes.
Not cheesecloth.
Not cheesecloth. Mm-hmm. The thin dishcloth. Put it through there, and then hang it somewhere with a bowl underneath.
Yeah.
And let the liquid drip out overnight. And the next day you taste that, it's really good. And what I like to do with that, I make it into little balls, and then I roll it into some spices, like, for example, black pepper or thyme. Just roll it in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good.
Wow.
That's one of my latest.
That's something I could do. That sounds like fun.
It's so simple.
Well, that's what I love. There are just so many wonderful foods and flavors, and once you get the hang of it and you have some basic equipment like a blender or food processor, you can do so many great things.
Definitely. Those type of things are very reasonably priced compared, let's say, to a stove.
Right.
Or a microwave.
Yes, so microwave, bad.
That's a whole show in itself.
Oh, gosh.
May I give my website?
Yes.
Okay, my website is www.rawfoodinfo.com, and I have my book available there, and I also have a DVD which I did recently, which is called What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen.
That's good.
Thank you.
I'm looking at the colored pictures in the book right now.
Uh-huh.
And the celestial pecan pie, I've made it. It's really yummy with some very basic ingredients. And I just like it because it's sort of out of the box in terms of when we think of a pie. This has fruit on the bottom, which makes the crust.
I reversed it.
Yeah. And then the blended pecans are on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see what else here looks really lovely. Oh, the other thing is maki and vegetable rolls. This is something that most people can do without any real fancy equipment and can make some easy and portable foods that are rolled up in nori.
Right, in nori, or you can even use collard leaves.
Oh, collard greens.
Collard greens, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you can use a lot of different vegetables to stuff things in. You know, a lot of people like stuffed foods. I do, too.
Well, that's something.
It's a beautiful presentation, too.
Yeah, but I'm always trying to think, you know, what is like the foods that people are used to eating? There's certainly a lot of wonderful pizza recipes that can be raw. You do need a dehydrator many times, except for your portobello pizza.
Right.
And I like things that you can eat with your hand that are portable, wrapped in a collard leaf or a lettuce leaf or what else can we wrap in?
Well, you can put things in, let's say, a bell pepper. You know, you either quarter it or half it.
Oh, there we go. Stuffing.
Something in it.
Yes.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And I also make, I think I have it in this book, because I have so many recipes rolling around now, I don't know what's in where, but I think I have a chili relleno recipe in the book.
I believe I do. My very favorite, and it's not in this book, but I found it on your website a long time ago, and it was Lee's lasagna.
Oh, Lee's lasagna is the best. It's better than my lasagna in the book.
Yeah, I've been to a number of raw food restaurants, and none of them compare to this recipe. And is it still on your website?
I think it might be, yes. And it's going to be in my next book, too.
Okay, well, that's the winner of all winners. So thank you, Lee, for that. Rio, it's been great talking to you. Please check out Rio's website, rawfoodinfo.com.
Right.
And you've been listening to me. I'm Karen Hartglass. This has been It's All About Food. Thank you so much, Rio.
Thank you.
Next week, we're going to have John Joseph, and he's really an interesting person. I hope you join me. He's the author of a book called Meat is for Pussies, and he's the lead singer with the Cro-Mags, so it's going to be a very interesting talk. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.